Indeed it is, and we're going to take your monster phone calls with Bob Curran when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls. We've got Dr. Bob Curran here as we talk about man-made monsters. What scares you the most, Bob, of all this, when you were doing your research into these monsters? Was there anything there that was a little frightening for you?
I have sort of got beyond being frightened, George. The thing which frightens me most is how little I know about all these things. I wouldn't say it was frightening, but it was simply a sense of awe and of curiosity and the amazement of what sort of links we could make between you talked to me about leprechauns and things like that. And what amazes me most is the connections which humans make between all these things, the metaphors which exist. I mean, as I said, I could have done a book which was twice as thick on this. And I kept saying to the publishers, can we do this? Can we do that? And they said, no. We only have so much space. I mean, one of the things which I wanted to look at, for example, was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Because was that a man-made monster? Because he drank the potion which changed him into something else. And they said, that's something else. We can do that in future. But all the connections of how people interpret things, and we have looked at werewolves, we have looked at vampires, we have looked at zombies, and there's a sort of interconnectedness about it. And you asked me what frightens me most, and I think what did frighten me was where it could go. The potential that, let's say, man-made monsters have, where it could go, and what could be created. I think if we handle it right, we can create something good. If we handle it wrong, we can create something bad. But everything seems to be connected, and we can make assumptions about one thing based on some of our assumptions about another. So nothing has frightened me except if it gets into the wrong hands. And it could be a governmental hand. It could be rather than simply a mad scientist. But what thrilled me most in doing all this work was a sense of intrigue. Yeah, I was intrigued by everything.
Interesting. All right, let's take a few calls here and continue our chat. Bob, Maggie, Holiday, Utah, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Maggie. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you. Hi, Dr.
Sure.
Bob.
Hello, Maggie. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am surviving a snowfall. We're snowed in here in Northern Ireland, so the snow is beginning to melt eventually.
Well, we are in the same situation here, so the skiing is great, though.
Oh, that's grand.
Anyway, I have a question that I hope is not too far off the grid, but I have always wondered about Rh positive blood versus Rh negative blood.
Yep.
And I happen to have Rh negative blood, and I happen to live in the times where, you know, there are things that can be done so you can have more than one child without creating the antibodies.
Right.
But is there... do you know anything about that? Could that be a man-made or just a genetic?
Well, one of the things, Maggie, is that I think, and we've talked about man-made monsters, but I think we actually, our bodies have changed naturally over the centuries as we come down across the centuries, and our bodies change to suit our environment in some sense. Now, We talk about man-made monsters, but there are twists and turns in that journey, if you like, for some people. Not one of us is the same. And I suspect that the blood changes are part of a genetic thing which have come down across the centuries. I'm not a geneticist, but I suspect that we are continually changing, we are continually evolving, and we are continually getting into sort of side areas, if you like, where blood changes, some stays the same, some changes. I think it's part of a genetic cycle in response to the environment. As the environment changes, I think so do we gradually over time.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, thank you so much, Maggie. Thank you, Bob, as well. Bob, let's go to Elliot in Toledo, Ohio. Go ahead, Elliot. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. I got a question for you, Bob. Who are the Darrows?
Who are they?
Yeah, the Darrows, the creatures that the CIA had been investigating.
I'm not exactly sure who they are, but there are all sorts of creatures which it is said that the CIA are investigating. There are a number of creatures which are said to be created. For example, in places like Ohio, there were creatures living out in the wilds, and we referred to them as the Melonheads. And these were supposedly genetically created from children in various orphanages. There are also what we might term, the CIA have termed, natural mutants. This is brought about by inbreeding in various areas of America, and I know that the CIA have been looking into this. Because there's been rumors of cannibalism, there have been rumors of inbreeding, there have been all sorts of things. So I would suspect those are around those sort of things. Now, whether or not they are man-made monsters, I'm not at all sure. But they are very mysterious creatures. And I suspect that some of them actually exist.
Okay. Let's go next to Daniel in Chicago, Illinois. Go ahead, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Bob. Hi, George. Hi. I'd like to say that as soon that we're going to be making machines more and more complicated and more complex, and it's bound to come to a point where we're going to bump heads and we're not going to agree like on some Star Trek episodes. And they're going to make up their minds, you know, that we're silly and, you know, to take the control. Was it from us in various issues, you know? We'll give them orders that they can't kill, but they see us killing, and they, you know, they're just going to be very confused about that, and they're going to say, you know, what goes on here, and, well, we're just going to have to do things our way. Also, on this man-made monster thing, I'm convinced that they are being created even now in various places. In this country and in other parts of the world,
that is always. If we can come to the first part of your question, Daniel, that is always the great fear that we will create something for good, which might turn against us or which might confuse us, that we could create a computer which might, as you quite rightly say, take over our government or whatever, and we become far too dependent on the machines so that the machines can, as you say, regard us as silly or as inferior. I still think that the government is beginning to develop soldiers. I was talking earlier about modifying ourselves, and I think as time goes on, we become almost genetically modified to suit our environment. But I still think that the government, for various reasons, for perhaps reasons of security or perhaps in order to fight or whatever, are thinking. Now, how far the experiments have gone, I don't know, because I'm not privy to that. But I think that the government are thinking about modifying us. I do know that there are genetic modifications which can be made, which can give you a blue-eyed baby, if you want. And I think that science actually exists. But how far the actual experimentation on genetically modifying people have gone, I don't know. But I know, because I've seen papers on it, that it that the thinking is actually there to genetically modify, particularly, let's say, with space travel, when people go out into space for long periods, what effect is it, and how can these be effects be counteracted? For instance, you go to Mars, you're in a weightless atmosphere, you're in a long period of isolation. How would you deal with that? And the thinking is there that you can be genetically modified or technologically modified to deal with those situations.
All right, very good. Next up, we go to Dustin in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Let's get you in here. First-time caller. Hi, Dustin.
Hello, how you doing?
Okay.
I just had a quick one for you. What about vampires? Would vampires, they're more of the craze nowadays. Would that be a human one, or would that be more of a mythological one?
Well, yes and no, Dustin, and good morning to you. You have both the supernatural and the genetic, because you do have a disease which craves iron. It's called porphyria. And that can be found in some humans. It is actually a disease. I hesitate to say that it can actually be induced in some humans, but because I'm not 100% sure. But certainly it is a genetic condition, but you have a mythological notion, and we could spend an entire program of 3 to 4 hours talking about vampires, but there are genetic vampires, people suffering from disease, and there are mythological vampires. So once again, genetic science, if you like, and mythology sort of merge in together, and the distinctions become very blurred.
Tell me about the children of the clay.
The children of the clay are sort of the early conceptions of sort of ourselves. You remember that whenever we talked about the golem, there were supposed to be certain prototypes which were created by the supreme being, Jehovah, whatever you want to call him, sort of to ahead of our ancestor Adam. Now, what happened to those? Were they destroyed, as some people say, or did they survive? And there is a legend which says that the great flood, which appears in all mythologies, including the Christian one, Noah's flood, was designed to wipe out the last remnants of these creatures which had been created. Some of them said there were giants. It said their sons grew strong as men of old, for there were giants in those days. Some people said that they were monsters, And some people say that they were merely wicked humans who had less of God in them, or less morals, or less, or maybe without a soul, which distinguished them from us. So you have this tradition of what are these people, and were they destroyed, and what became of them?
Next up, we go to Don in Paynes Creek, California. Go ahead, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I don't know if it's a ghost, I mean, a monster story or what, it really a bad happening to me. Well, I was in the Marine Corps in 1968, and you know where 29 Palms are. Are you there?
Yeah, yep. We're listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, 29 Palms, California is the Mojave Desert. We were on a desert survival thing, me and three other guys. We were quite a ways out away from the base, and this was at night. It was a start at night, enough, and we were looking across the plain. We had set up our own perimeter, and we seen this red light, and as it was going across the desert, and when it got even with us, it turned and it started straight at us. Now, all four of us were expert shots, and my three friends fired, but the light just kept coming, and it was coming faster and faster at us. When it got close, within 100 yards of it, I fired, and all of a sudden, the light divided, and there were three different lights, and they were coming from three different directions, and they went right through us. Didn't stop. They went through us and went the other side. I don't know to this day what it was, or had no idea what it was. I was 19 years old when that happened.
Well, there are all sorts of explanations. And I can give you a scientific one, which means that it might be some sort of natural phenomenon. It might be some people might interpret that as aliens. Other people might interpret that as bruja. Now, the brujo are a form of witch, which travel in the shape, it is alleged, in mythology, in numbers, and in the form of balls of light, which can attack. They're almost like a vampire, and they can draw energy from you. So you pay your money, you take your choice, whether it's a scientific thing or whether it's a mythological thing. It could be witches, it could be strange alien forms, or it could be a natural phenomenon.
Bob, where do you get the book, Man-Made Monsters?
The book, Man-Made Monsters, is available on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble. And, George, it's available from all good booksellers. And, mind you, I haven't met a bad bookseller yet. So you look about on the net or in your bookshop, and you'll probably find it.
You had fun writing this one, didn't you?
I enjoy writing this one. Mind you, I enjoy them all because what the publishers say to me, it's time we wrote about this, it's time we wrote about, and I said, right, I'll go away, and I begin to find out more, and I have a lot of fun with most of them, but this one, I think, tickled me more because, as I said at the very start of the interview, one of the things which...
Well, I know you liked it, Bob, and we'll be back with more. You want to become a StreamLink member, Coast Insider, simply go to coasttocoastam.com and get all kinds of benefits there for just simply pennies a day. I'll be back in a moment with final calls with Bob Curran on Coast to Coast AM. Bob, what can you tell us about the Knights Templar and whatever they were up to?
Well, the Knights Templar were a specific order. They were formed during the Crusades by several French knights, most notably Hugh de Payens. And their specific role was to protect pilgrims on their way to the newly opened shrines of Christendom, which had been recaptured from the Turks or the Saracens. But they were granted sort of ownership, if you like, or their headquarters were based at the ancient Temple of Solomon. And it was said that they had found a number of very unusual things there, which they brought back, one of which was said to be the head of Christ or something like that. But they also were said to have become imbued, if you like, with Saracen magic. And it is thought that they brought back various scrolls from the Holy Land, which they then used to perform magical feats. And it is said one of the things which they found was the origin of, or the way, a formula for making life. They were also said to bring back a brass head, which was supposed to prophesy for them. Now, that was an ancient medieval story. It was also attributed to Roger Bacon, a monk who had allegedly developed a brass head which spoke and which was supposed to be able to prophesy. Now, there's a story, and I mentioned it in the book about Bacon. But the Knights Templar were supposed to bring back a whole number of strange and mysterious things from the East, or the Middle East, one of which was supposed to be the origin of life and a formula for making life. Whether or not they did is a matter of question, because there was a great deal of propaganda against them. The Templars were actually ancient bankers, and they were many of the ancient kings, or the medieval kings, were in hock to them, particularly Philip IV of France, who led a campaign against them. And as the Pope, Clement V, was French, the French king was able to exert influence on him, and the Templars were burned for witchcraft and heresy. Their orders and holy houses were dissolved, and their property was handed over to the Hospitallers, St. John of Jerusalem. In England, it's St. John's Ambulance Brigade. They had a great tradition of mysticism and sorcery. They were said to worship the goat of Mendes, Baphomet, which is supposedly a corruption of the name Muhammad, which was worshipped by the Saracens. So the Knights Templar had an aura of mystery, of sorcery, of early science about them. Now, it's possible that some of the Templars themselves experimented in their early sciences. I mean, it was not unusual for monks or for nobles to sometimes experiment with various things, and they got the name of magicians. So they were burned around about Jacques de Molay, great Grand Master of the Templar was Templars was burned in 1305 in France, and is supposed to have cursed the French royal family, which shortly died out shortly after that, or that particular strand of it died out shortly after that. So all sorts of legends and a mystery surrounds them.
All right, to the phones we go. Final calls. Gail is in Tampa, Florida. We'll get you going. Hi, Gail. Go ahead.
Hi, Gail. Hi, this is Gail. My question is, what are we doing as far as maybe creating Mars-adaptable creatures? Or this, I'm just using the planet Mars as an example, like creatures that would be able, not just robots, but creatures that would be adaptable to living on other planets, just like possibly maybe somebody did to get us here in the first place?
That's a good question, Gail, and hello to you. We have found, there is medical evidence for this, that things like prolonged space flight, and you're quite right to talk about Mars and things, because that we're beginning to think about that. Prolonged space flight will have adverse conditions on the human body. For instance, it may weaken the bone structure. So what we have to be thinking of, and while I don't know how far the experimentation on this has how far down the line this has gone, I know that the thinking is there, that we will have to adapt people for long periods of space flight, and also whenever they get there, because you're looking at, if we take the example of Mars, you're looking at a relatively sterile atmosphere, you're looking at much less gravity. If you're going to be working there, I mean, you'll be in controlled conditions, but the atmosphere will be very different, and the landscape and conditions around you will be very difficult, different. The other thing which you will have to be working with will be prolonged periods of isolation. For instance, if you're on a space vehicle traveling to Mars, I don't know how long it takes to go to Mars, but I assume it's quite a long time, and you're looking at months and years going to Mars. You will be relatively isolated in the company, so you need to adapt yourself to deal with that. Now, whether you can do this by chemical means, whether you can do this by technological means, both have been thought about, and there's still talk about microchips being put in people's brains to cut out to block out certain desires or feelings or whatever, and make them more amenable. So the thinking is there. And some experimentation may well have been done. I don't know, because I'm not privy to it, but I suspect that I know the thinking is there, and I suspect, as we were saying earlier, that perhaps some experimentation has been done.
Okay, very good. We've got John in Walnut, California. Go ahead, John.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, John. Thanks.
I just want to thank you both for taking my call.
And, sure.
Lovely to talk to you, John.
Yes, sir. I wanted to talk about, or I just had a guest talk about researching the monsters. You guys talk about Plum Island and mm-hmm. some of the monsters that show up on the East Coast, like the Montauk Monster.
Are you familiar with Plum Island at all, Bob?
Sorry?
Are you familiar with Plum Island on the East Coast?
Yes, I know roughly where you're talking about, John.
Lots of strange things going on there.
There's all sorts of queer things. I'm not terribly familiar with what's going on, but I do know that there are bizarre creatures buzzing about there.
Are there other regions, other countries experimenting like you think we are?
I think possibly, and I was asked about this before. I suspect that certain things have been going on within Russia. I received some stuff about men. We were doing a book on werewolves, and I received a book or an article on experiments, which was again crossbreeding with wolves. We were talking about men and wolves, and there were supposedly genetic experiments which were to increase intelligence, sharpen up faculties, because the wolf has a slightly sharper faculty system than we have, and I suspect that things are like that are being done in Russia. There was also talk of experimentations in super soldiers again in China. And nobody knows what's going on in North Korea, but there could be stuff going on there as well. Yes, I do think that there are sort of human adaption processes going on there, and we may or may not ever know about what's going on. So you have things like Plum Island and pretty weird stuff going on, allegedly going on there. I am not fully familiar with it, but I know of it.
Would you say that the scientists that are working on this are mad scientists, or are they pretty sharp?
I think what is more scary, George, is not that you're looking at the traditional mad scientist, but what you're looking at is a government. A government, as I say, the nature of war, for example, the nature of warfare is changing, and governments are trying to match the nature of warfare so that warfare becomes more sporadic. Warfare becomes, in a global sense, in different areas, and governments are beginning to look at ways in which they might combat the threat, let's say, from Al-Qaeda or from some sort of disparate group, so that you're fighting in different theaters, you're fighting different foes, and you need to adapt to that. So therefore, I don't think the scientists are mad. I think the scientists are being guided by increasingly paranoid governments in some parts of the world. And it is the governments we need to worry about rather than the mad scientists. The mad scientists can be taken out because for every monster in our mythology, there is also a hero who can possibly defeat the monster. So the mad scientist can be defeated, and we have watched mad scientists being defeated by heroes right down the years. What is more difficult to defeat is a paranoid government who is terrified of what's going on and uses people's terror to push through legislation. I mean, we suddenly find bogeyman under the bed, right, left, and center, and we have continued to do this from the McCarthyite era down to the present day.
It hasn't stopped.
Boogeymen are about, and this allows us to conduct all sorts of experimentation in the national interest.
Let's go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. Rochelle, first-time caller. Go ahead, hon.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I myself have epilepsy, and I wondered if you believe anything with epilepsy and monsters. And I would think it'd be great if, George, maybe you could do something, a show with epilepsy. I really feel that we don't get enough information about epilepsy. It's usually cancers and things like that.
I would totally agree with you, Michelle. Down the years, epilepsy, because of the fits, and I have worked with people with epilepsy myself, and I think epilepsy gets a pretty low press, if you like. But down the years, people have been frightened. And you asked, was there a connection into monsters? Yes, it was thought of demon possession back in the medieval period. Epilepsy was considered to be sort of demon possession, distorting the human being. And I think that some of that still hangs over into the modern day, that people are frightened of people with epilepsy because they're a bit different and because they're almost, and I hope you'll forgive me for saying this, almost monstrous in our view. And I think one of the things which we can do about it is give more information and more education. And I would fully support what you've just said, Michelle.
Okay, very good. Next is Scott in Mankato, Minnesota. Go ahead, Scotty.
Good evening, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Bob, I was interested in knowing if you had ever heard of or are familiar with the legend of the little people of Scarabray, which is apparently some area or part of Orkney.
It is indeed. Scarabray, yes. Now, we do know that there are various types of people who have existed. We talked about man-made monsters, and I said to George that nature had taken various twists themselves and created all. And we do know that there were small Pictish people who were living in Scarabray back in prehistoric times, and they have left evidence of their settlement. They may well, and we're not 100% sure about who they were, but they were smaller people than we were, and they may have given rise to the notion of the fairies or whatever. It's interesting because here in North Antrim, in Northern Ireland, we have small people who are called pechts, and these are a form of fairy, and they're small, and they're sort of almost prehistoric in tone. They're a bit like Bigfoot or something on a smaller scale, and they're called grugachs or pechts, and they're probably a race memory of people a bit like those who came from Scarabray who lived here in North Antrim. So there's connections all over the place. But yes, the small people of Scarabray may well have been a sort of offshoot of ourselves.
Name of the book is Man-Made Monsters by Dr. Bob Curran. It's one of many that he has written. And, of course, Bob is a regular guest here on Coast to Coast. Bob, I want to thank you. Have a great holiday out there in Ireland, my friend.
And can I wish you and all your listeners, George, a very happy Christmas. And I hope you have a great holiday.
Thank you so much. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.